Fourth and final hour of Darren Adonik here inside Bridgestone Arena. We're here at our set, Jack Daniels Barrel House. It's the Predators and the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight. 7 o'clock puck drop. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6 and everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Predators, of course, coming off a shutout victory over the Leafs here on Tuesday night. They actually shut out Toronto twice this year, both times. Pretty interesting stat. Only the second team to ever do that in Leafs history in a season series. Oh, with that being said, let's head up to Toronto. Let's bring in Richard Deitch from The Athletic. It's what a coincidence that I had that stat there ready right before Richard. Richard, how you doing?
Nothing like the Predators to remind you of what an elite team is if you're a Toronto Maple Leafs fan.
I was shocked that Toronto only mustered up 40 shots in both meetings this year, and the Predators outscored them 7-0 in two shutouts. I mean, Toronto's obviously a really good team, but I've been surprised at how they've looked against the Preds this year.
Well, Pecorine is a good goalie, and obviously he played really well against the Maple Leafs. You know, the Maple Leafs came into that game really struggling. They probably played their best game in five games. And defensively, they were pretty good. You know, a couple mistakes, obviously. Predators capitalized. But there's a gap. There's a gap between the elite teams in the league, like Nashville, like Tampa Bay. I'd probably put Boston on there. You know, maybe put Calgary on there now, San Jose, and Toronto. And the hope here, and honestly, it feels more like a 30-70, 40-60 hope, is that when the playoffs come around, the offense could really get going and Freddie Anderson will stand up, and that's how they're going to win. But there's something off. That's not really true. I think the expectations in Toronto, because it's the hockey capital of Canada, are always outsized. And I think because they have such great offensive players, they're really outsized. But it's clear that there are teams above them right now. And until they get their back line a little bit better, they're going to be behind the Predators. I will say, Predators look good. I mean, that defensively, that is a really, really good team. The West is not easy, but I give Nashville as good a shot as anybody.
Interesting. What did you make of Major League Baseball kicking off their regular season in Japan? Most people had no clue the Mariners and A's played a meaningful game, and it actually counted, and there's still like a week and a half of spring training left, and there they are playing games that count in the standings in Japan. What do you make of that?
You guys got a cash register sign somewhere or a sound effect somewhere?
Cha-ching. Cha-ching.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the league is about promoting its product outside of its shores, and Japan is a very good market for Major League Baseball, given all the Japanese players that have played here. And so they're going to sell out those games. They're going to sell a lot of merchandise. They're going to be able to globally extend their brand into Japan. I don't know what the league's, television deal is in Japan or streaming or whatever else, but there's no doubt it could be a lucrative market. So that's what that is. If you're Major League Baseball, your calculation, and I think in this case they'll probably be right, your calculation is that opening day on the 28th is still going to get everybody excited domestically, stateside, and that people are not going to like all of a sudden think, okay, well, they played these games in Japan, so this is not the quote-unquote opening day. You know, ESPN will have all its games on during the whole day, and people will be talking about baseball for as much as they talk about baseball on opening day. So they'll be able to sort of – they'll be able to – still get the benefits of an opening day. But I think the thing that's the weirdest thing about this to me, it's not that necessarily the games were in Japan. It's that they're like 10 days before the start of the regular season.
Yeah, before.
That's the odd part. Like, if this would have happened on like the 26th, the 27th, 28th, you know, I'm like, all right, that's kind of interesting. You guys are starting the year somewhere else. It's so far away from the actual start of the season that the standings sit there, you know, with two teams that have already played, they have statistics. So, like, if you're a fantasy baseball player, like, those statistics already exist, and you got to wait another 7 days for the season. That's the odd part to me.
Yeah, I mean, the Texas Rangers and the Nashville Sounds are playing an exhibition game in our city on Sunday, and Major League Baseball has already had games that count. That doesn't make any sense.
And by the way, break up the Mariners. They look like they're going to win 162 this year.
They're on pace.
They're off to a really good start. You know, you just had an interesting conversation with some folks who do podcasts. And obviously that's a big thing here. Willie and I just had Ida and Julie in studio with us for an hour, a wife and a fiance of two Predators players. And they've been doing these podcasts and getting a lot of notoriety. They went on NHL Network. And who knows, maybe you can talk to them down the road. But you got a chance to talk to an interesting group of podcasters. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so in the latest, first of all, thank you for this free promo. In the latest sports media podcast, I have four different sports podcast shows on where they go behind the scenes and just tell me how they do what they do, why they do it, how many downloads they have, how long it takes them to put together each week, why they're in podcasting, how they hope they could grow. And the two most known ones that I did, I intentionally tried to do people sort of a different level. So we have like a super independent one, then a semi-independent one, then a couple mainstream ones. And the biggest one I have is a guy named Conrad Thompson. If you are a wrestling fan, you've probably heard of him. He brilliantly, in my opinion, capitalized on the nostalgia for 1980s and 1990s wrestling and put these shows together with three people who were known at that time. Bruce Prichard, who was played Brother Love in the WWE but was also an executive. Eric Bischoff, who ran WCW and also was a big part of WWE. And Tony Schiavone, who was essentially the voice of WCW, the voice of Southern wrestling for a long time. And rather than talk about what's going on in today's wrestling storylines, he has these guys on, and they just basically take a very small thing from the past, and they do like 2 or 3 hours on what happened behind the scenes, the finances of the time, the conflicts of the time, and it's really fascinating. And the guy has just hit it out of the park. He's got three podcasts that probably average like well over 500,000 downloads each week.
Wow.
He's making a ton of money, seven figures for sure. And he's extended his podcast brand where he does these live shows around the country. So, you know, like he and Bruce Prichard will do like, we'll go to Huntsville or Nashville or New York. They'll rent out like a comedy club or some kind of small theater, charge money, and people are paying, you know, he's getting like 400, 500 people to come and sort of do a live show. You know, you add all this money up, the guy created a seven-figure business, and in his real life, he's just a mortgage broker. So he's the most interesting guy that I spoke with. I talked to Greg Wyshynski and Emily Kaplan. They do the ESPN on Ice podcast. And, you know, again, certainly talented people, but what Thompson did is amazing to me because he sort of just created this major business out of his own brain. I will say this, though. It does help. He is married to one of Ric Flair's daughters, so he is in the world, so to speak. Not Charlotte Flair, by the way, the other one of the other Flair daughters. But he's just an interesting guy, and that was really – every time I've talked to him, I found what he has done fascinating because he just created this mega business essentially out of his love for professional wrestling.
Seven figures. Wow.
Yep. Seven. Yeah, he is making more than $1 million a year on this podcast between the live shows and all that stuff. Now, I don't know if he's bringing it all in because he obviously has these guys he works with and he has a staff now. But think about that. He created a seven-figure podcast on wrestling nostalgia. There are other seven-figure podcasts. You know, trust me, Joe Rogan, Adam Carolla, the Part of My Take guys, they're making seven figures as well. But this guy did it with wrestling nostalgia, which is just, you got to tip your hat to him.
Richard Deitch is with The Athletic. He is the author of The Media Circus. Great way to keep up on what's going on in the sports media world. And, Richard, you pointed this out. I think we all agree, and you're like, part of you is saying, well, duh, you should have known this a long time ago. But you do have to give CBS and their crew credit for adjusting back to the way we all want to see the brackets unveiled, where they get right to it, and then they do the analysis after it's over, where – before, they were trying to tease you. They're trying to make you wait as long as you could possibly wait for the wrong reasons.
Phenomenal job by CBS. They listened to the criticism that TBS got last year, which was robust and correct. 2 years ago, CBS extended that selection show where, I wrote about this, remember, 77 minutes it took them to get to the whole bracket. I mean, think about that, 77 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
This year, no fooling around, one-hour show. They got to the entire bracket in 35 minutes. They opened the show up 2 minutes in, first bracket. Great, best show I've seen in years. Universally on social media and other places, they were praised and deserved to be praised. a great example of a network listening to its fan base, changing on the fly, and getting rewarded for it. The good news is it doesn't always happen, but the good news, their viewership number was the most in 5 years. So that's cool. That's an example of everybody winning, including CBS. And I think Turner has the show next year. I'm not sure about this, but I think so. I would think Turner does not have, as we would say, the cojones to go back to what they did 2 years ago. I have to think that this is the show heading forward, and it should be. You know, you want don't play games. Don't hide the brackets for a couple of hours and sort of just, you know, give us analysis, blah, blah, blah. Like that's about getting those brackets out, getting excited about starting to fill out the brackets, and we'll watch. What we don't want is to sort of get this bait and switch where you say it's the selection show, but, you know, 77 minutes in is when we finally get the selection.
No doubt about it. One thing that I guess is new this year, Gene Steratore is going to be sort of on site from the studio to go with rules violations, rules interpretations, things like that. Has that ever happened in the NCAA tournament before?
I don't think so, but he, you know, people know Steratore from an NFL referee, but
sure.
He was a Big Ten referee for a long time. He's a basketball ref, so I think that's a good addition. You know, how much it'll come up, I don't know. You know, a lot of times basketball is one of those things where you have enough replays and video where it's not like the NFL. It's sort of rather apparent. But, you know, if it's a big moment and there's some kind of technical decision that the viewers should be informed about, it's a good asset to have Steratore in the studio, and at the Final Four he'll be on site, you know, just to be able to go to him. I would not expect to see him a ton every day, but, you know, there may be one or two things where you bring the guy on to sort of explain why a ruling was made. But, you know, the thing about basketball, I'm not telling you or your audience anything you don't know. So much of it is subjective, you know, in terms of what's a foul, what's not a foul. And it's not like the NFL. I think having a guy just basically say, well, I think that should have been a foul, or that should have been a non-call, you could sort of also do that with your own eyes, basically. It's a little different than football.
Well, one thing I do want to ask you, because I feel like it's going to be a big thing throughout the tournament, is the reviews at the end of the game, which are excruciating to watch. It's been happening throughout the regular season, and it's only going to get magnified, I think, in these very important games, where in the last minute, in particular the call that I'm talking about, is two guys go for the ball, it goes out of bounds. In the past, referee makes the call, you go on. Now, it's almost like the referee knows he doesn't even have to make a call. He's just going to go over and look at the monitor anyway, and you really can't tell on at least 50% of these plays, and yet the game is going to get delayed. Both teams get a free timeout. There could be situations where a team doesn't have a timeout, but they get to huddle up and do whatever they want to do over there. So do you think that the kind of in the fold that you just said, Richard, that CBS, they heard the criticism, they moved on. Do you think college basketball will be sort of shamed into adjusting, maybe going to a challenge system instead of just every call in the last minute? It happens in the NBA, too, as well.
It's possible, Willie. I'm not as down on this as you, because I like, again, as a viewer, I'm okay with the delay if you ultimately get the right call. And the reason I say that is because I'm a longtime soccer fan, and it was very frustrating watching global soccer or World Cup soccer when you know that a goal was actually either scored or not scored, and they refused to use goal line technology, and now they finally have. So I'm okay with the delay, and yes, I get that it's an advantage for a team that doesn't have timeouts, and I get that it sort of, it does take away from the drama of the game, but I'm someone who likes, I like technology being accurate, because I think that's the fairest thing to the players and the programs. That said, you know, it is an entertainment vehicle, and things like challenges and stuff like that will help the speed of stuff, and I would not be surprised if that happens. But I would just rather they get it right, and I could live with the three-minute delay. But, you know, again, I've watched every Raptors game, obviously, for my job up here, and you are correct. I mean, like, literally, it feels like 15 of the 65 games. In the last 2 minutes, there's a long delay as the refs try to figure out, like, an out-of-bounds call.
One thing we did appreciate here Tuesday night, puck drop was at 7 o'clock. The game was over by 9:20. And you brought up the soccer
nice.
Reference. Man, it felt like a soccer. It was like, wow, okay, we could get used to games being this quick. I don't know if that'll be the case tonight, but it was nice. We took it for a game.
And then everybody goes out in Nashville, which is a very lively party city, and so everybody wins.
Oh, there's no doubt. In fact, Josh Yowie joined us from The Athletic last hour here at the desk with us, who covers the Penguins, and he said 2 years ago in the Stanley Cup Final, there were Pittsburgh media that ended up in the hospital from their visits to Nashville.
Wow. Way to get your amateur status checked. The old hospital check-in as a sports writer.
No doubt. Hey, always good to talk to you. Thanks for doing this.
See you guys.
Richard Deitch from The Athletic will come back. We'll find out. Louisville's making it interesting. Yale's making it interesting. We'll tell you what's happening on the other side. 102.5 The Game. Yale, scrappy. They are fighting LSU. They are punching back. They've cut this thing down to 7. 61-54 LSU. I didn't see the time. What, just under 7 minutes to go?
The under 8 timeout is going on, like 7 and change left in the game. I would say 7:27 is left. Yale has been one play away from really making it interesting, and they've had chances. They just missed a big three that would have cut it. They almost came up with a steal, and they didn't get it. They didn't box out one time. LSU's still in decent shape here, but you're right. Yale is scrapping. They're making it interesting here. But LSU, I still think, is in pretty good shape. Ultimately, it does look like Minnesota is going to hold off any rally by Louisville.
Louisville got it down to 7.
Yeah, they had a big three that would have been, you know, you're one shot away from really tightening the screws, but they never really could break through that. And so Minnesota is in great shape. If they make a couple of free throws here, 39 seconds left, up 9, they should be fine.
Well, that'll be a big X on my bracket.
Yeah.
Then you've got Auburn right now. They are at the half. Auburn leading New Mexico State 32-29. What did I say? 39. Yeah, 32-29. Yeah. That's the Midwest region. That game is on TNT. So Auburn up 3 at the half on New Mexico State. That's a 5-12. And right now, midway through the first half, Vermont, the 13 seed, with the 1-point lead on Florida State. So a 4-13, that's the West region out in Salt Lake City. And so right now the Seminoles, I need Florida State to win because I have Florida State going far, pretty far. So I that would be a huge upset. And then the next tip will be in about 20 minutes. It'll have Michigan State, a sizable favorite, about an 18-point favorite over Bradley. So that's the 2 versus 15, and we've seen Michigan State when they were a 2 take on a 15, and it did not end well.
Yep.
The last time.
It can happen.
Kermit Davis and the Blue Raiders got it done. Led start to finish. That's what was probably the most impressive about that upset. They never trailed in the game. And then last year you had the first ever 1 seed go down. Never seen that happen. But I have been saying it for years. Like, you can bet it is going to happen. And sure enough, Virginia got ran off the floor last year. And they were the first ever 1 seed to lose in the first round. Yale is 4 of 25 from 3-point
land. If they just hit one or two more, because they've had the looks, and they're a pretty good shooting team. That's what's really been frustrating, I'm sure, for them. They've been down 7, a 3 in the air, and just doesn't go in. But, you know, here they are, still hanging around.
Meanwhile, Minnesota has hit 11 3-pointers today, and they're right now 9-point lead with less than a minute to go over Louisville. Now, it does seem like if this plays out, and I do wonder if this will serve as a distraction. We were talking about LSU's distractions coming into this game as they just get a big bucket to go back up 9 with everything surrounding the program. Will there be a distraction? And we don't know if this is a done deal, but it does seem like all signs are pointing toward Buzz Williams being the next coach at Texas A&M. So Buzz Williams could be coming to the SEC. Will that serve as a distraction for Virginia Tech in this tournament? I believe they get Duke, right, in the second or
third
round, depending on how far they go. But
they would get them in the Sweet 16.
So that's how far I had Virginia Tech going, was playing Duke in the Sweet 16. But let's just say, so we'll find out, will that serve as a distraction or not? But let's just say, let's go on the premise that Buzz Williams takes that Texas A&M job. Yet again, another big-time coach coming to this conference and changing the whole landscape of SEC basketball. I mean, Buzz Williams is a big-time college basketball coach. He has won everywhere he's been, Marquette, Virginia Tech, and those are not easy jobs to win at. And now he'll have all the resources at Texas A&M, right, if this indeed happens. And I'm not saying it's done. I'm saying it seems like all signs are pointing toward Buzz Williams at Texas A&M. What does that mean? Does that mean then now that – and Billy Kennedy did a good job there. He did. But does this elevate Texas A&M's program to like a status that Buzz Williams typically has his programs at, where they're basically a perennial year in and year out tournament team?
Did I just see what I think I saw? I saw a friend of ours just get drilled at the scorer's table. The Belmont announcing crew just got taken out.
On
LSU.
Look at that's the drink. Kevin Ingram. And he got doused.
Oh, my gosh. He's going to be a national hero.
And he was grabbing his arm. Is he hurt?
He's okay. Now, watch this. Here's the slow motion replay. Oh!
Did he get headbutted? He got wiped out by Williams of LSU.
And he did kind of, hey, are you okay? He looked over his shoulder, Williams.
And they are showing.
So if the Belmont broadcast doesn't quite get on the air at the right time.
Wow.
I think there could be some liquid on the equipment. Oh, my gosh. Greg Sage, he was unscathed. But Kevin Ingram took what. Now, this reminds me, remember we used to work at the same station as Kevin Ingram. Remember he was giving a report at Greer Stadium and got whacked with a batting practice home run?
Yes, hit him right in the face. Didn't he have to go to the hospital?
Well, he had a pretty good fat lip. I don't know if he went to the hospital, but he may have had to go to the doctor. Oh, my gosh.
Williams just wiped him out jumping across
the table. He was trying to save it, and he went right into the scorer's table. And Kevin's drink is all over him right now.
Good thing it's radio for him, even though he's just been shown on television. Good thing he's doing radio. Minnesota up 8 with 28 seconds to go. LSU is up 9 with 5.5 to go. And we told you Auburn is at the half up 3. Florida State has taken the 1-point lead, just under 8 minutes to go in the first half in that one. We'll come back with more of Darren and Donick on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, Marquise has already told us he is 1-0 in our bracket. We're all competing against each other. First game is in the books. Minnesota, 10-point winner, the 10 seed, getting it done. And in our bracket, the first two rounds, this is our private bracket, not the games, okay? The private bracket, you get the seed. So Marquise gets a hefty 10 points as the 10 seed beats the 7.
Oh, we're doing it that way?
We've always done it that way. Yep. By the seed. First two rounds.
Look, I'll take it, man. That's why you never doubt a Patino, man. Never doubt a Patino.
Never never doubt a Patino? I would think just the
opposite. If you put your money on a
Patino. Shouldn't you always doubt a Patino?
Look, Darren, if you put your money on a Patino, they may get a player with that money, but they're also going to get you a tournament win, and that's what he got me today.
And then they get it stripped. So does your game get stripped at some point?
No. If you don't win the championship, then no, it doesn't.
Okay. All right. So you got to win the championship for that banner.
And I don't have them that far, so okay. We're good.
All right. So congratulations to Marquise. He did nail it. Willie and I had Louisville. So the Gophers, they're the first winner in the NCAA tournament in the first round.
Now, did anybody have Yale?
I did.
Willie's got Yale.
Okay.
Not looking good.
I mean, it's close, Willie. Come on.
Close doesn't get it done. You got to win.
All right, so 0-2 for you.
It's not cornhole, man. It's not cornhole. You can't just get it on the board.
Yep. No points for a cover.
Nope. No covers. So right now, LSU up 9 in that one. and Florida State is up a bucket with 6.5 to go against Vermont. Okay,
that's
so
in the first half for people listening.
First half. So tonight, we've been talking about this game here against Pittsburgh. Winnipeg played last night and shut out the Ducks. They're right back at it again tonight. The Jets are taking on Vegas. In fact, I just saw where Vegas is going to start Malcolm Subban in net tonight against Winnipeg. Winnipeg has had no skate, no nothing, so there's really no news on their front. But they got a big game against Vegas tonight.
And that's Vegas has won 9 out of 10 since the trade deadline.
And
since
still
they
can't
Stone.
Get any – I mean, they've got traction, right. But they still haven't been able to get that close to the two guys at the top, Calgary and San Jose in the Pacific.
Yeah, and so it's an intriguing game. Subban is a key guy for them because they have worked – we just got a great shot.
That's our buddy Chris Pappas on Twitter with that shot.
Oh, that is fantastic. Oh, my goodness.
Not good radio, but.
Not good radio. We just showed that was the incident that just took place at the scorer's table down in Jacksonville. But getting back to the discussion, we know how well Marc-Andre Fleury has played all year for Vegas, and he's such an important part for them. And as you kind of mentioned, they're not really in contention for the number one overall seed in the West. So they could coast and they're going to finish third, no worse. I guess they could try to get the second and have home ice in the first round of the playoffs. They're going to probably play San Jose. If not, they're going to play Calgary. They need a fresh, healthy Marc-Andre Fleury. He's played a ton of hockey this year. So Subban, to be able to win some games down the stretch, will be important. But if nothing else, you've got to give Fleury some rest. He's up there in age a little bit. There's another example of Yale with the chance, missed a layup, a contested layup, and here they go again. They stole it right back. So they finally cut it to 5 with 2:40 left. This is as close as they've been in a while. They've been knocking on the door, but they have not been able to really make it interesting. So that one all of a sudden is gotten a little more tense for LSU. Remember how they botched the late game situation.
Look, this is the thing with Benford. There's the reason he's the interim. This is not – LSU hasn't shown that they have the poise down the stretch without Will Wade to finish things off, and certainly they crumbled here in the final 2 minutes. They get a big rebound from Naz Reid.
They had a terrible shot. They threw up a terrible shot, terrible possession, just threw it at the basket. And Naz Reid was big enough to just grab it and stick it back in. So they got the bailout. So now they're up 7 with 2 minutes to go. Yale tries to counter with a 3, and again, they can't hit it. If Yale had been hitting it all from the outside in this game, LSU would have been in big, big trouble. But not going to happen. If they blow this game now, LSU should be ashamed. They're about to – ooh. They're going to go to the line shooting 2 with a minute 33 left, up 7.
So what are you expecting tonight?
Well, tonight I'm curious to see if Nashville can stay with the same formula that has worked so well against the Sharks and the Leafs. And that is, you know, coming out of the gate strong, you know, not easing into the game. That has been a big, big thing during this 3-game winning streak, is coming out of the gate strong. And then being able to play their game and play solid defensively, not just get really good goaltending, but play a solid defensive game where it's hard for the other team to generate a lot of quality scoring chances. You're going to give up a few. When you play the Penguins and you play the Sharks and you play the Maple Leafs, you're not going to just stifle them and give them nothing. They're going to get their chances. But if you can just limit those, you know, that is going to be a big thing. So it's the same type of team that they're playing against here, a team that doesn't need a lot of chances to score four or five goals, but if they can limit the chances, then I think that gives you a good feeling going to Winnipeg. So when you get down to it, they're playing four teams that have somewhat of the same statistical profile, elite offensive teams with great power plays that can just run you out of the building if you don't have your structure and your team game together. So it really helps when you can get out in front of those teams and you can play your game against them.
And no Malkin, right?
No Malkin tonight, but they do have Chris Letang back for a second straight game. He is like their Roman Yossi. He reminds you a lot of of Roman Yossi, the way he can carry the puck and generate offense, skate it out of trouble.
Chew up a lot of time.
Big minutes, too. Big minutes. He is a big difference maker for them. The thing about Pittsburgh is they've been leaning on their power play quite a bit. Their 5-on-5 has not been as good, at least with some of their key players. Now, Crosby, it doesn't matter. You can be 3-on-5.
Yep.
And Crosby, you know, he could be the MVP of the league. Once again, he's like one of those guys that, like Mike Trout, is every year he's right up there. So even if he doesn't have a particularly good year, you could make the argument he's still the best player in the league. I think the players' profiles that have come out have reflected that he's still the best. So that's a guy that you got to – we're going to see who matches up with them. And with Malkin out, maybe you can spend a little more time concentrating on his line, where that's hard to do when Malkin's out there. But still, they're going to make it tough.
And as we learned earlier today, he picked Tennessee in his Final Four in his NCAA bracket. I don't know if he's looking for a little, you know, little support here for the fans to take it easy on him. I don't know. That was – not sure. But he's got the Vols in the Final Four.
He does.
His NCAA bracket.
Yale just missed a three that would have cut it to three with a minute to go. Wide open.
It's kind of really been their game, though, today.
LSU came down. It took a terrible shot, contested layup that got blocked instead of running clock and getting put on the free throw line. And instead, look at this. They've missed 21 of 22 from three, Yale.
That is not going to
get
they're still, and they're only down six.
They're still only down six. They're 4 for 30 in the game from three. That is unbelievable.
LSU better be glad that they have the athletes they do on the floor, because most of this is just about them out-athleting Yale.
Oh, yeah.
Because they haven't deserved a lot of this. They're not a very smart team. Benford looks like he's way out of his element.
And if Belmont manages to win today, that's who they would get. And now Yale finally hits one, but it may be too late. Still 41 seconds. They've still got one timeout left. They're going to put LSU on the free throw line here. But LSU's still in the driver's seat. But what an intriguing matchup that would be.
But, of course, that is down in Jacksonville. Belmont and Maryland will tip after this game's 30 minutes after this game concludes. We'll come back and wrap up Thursday's edition of Darren and Donick. We do that next. If you're looking for some tickets to the final two home games for the Predators, Blackhawks and Canucks, tell you what, if you don't have any plans Saturday from 1 until 2 o'clock, go hang out with Nick Kale for Morning Drive and Nash and Dr. Pepper, because they're going to give away 10 pairs of tickets between 1 and 2 p.m. That means they're going to give away a pair of tickets every 5 minutes. You must be present to win, and that is at the Walmart in Mount Juliet. 300 Pleasant Grove Road, Walmart in Mount Juliet, 300 Pleasant Grove Road, Saturday from 1 until 2 o'clock. Like I said, you must be present to win. Dr. Pepper is also promoting their new edition of the Preds logo on their cans, so stop by, buy a 9-pack, and register to win. So if you want to go try to win some tickets from Nick and Nash, Walmart in Mount Juliet from 1 to 2 o'clock on Saturday will be your place. One game is in the books, and that is Minnesota beating Louisville by 10. That is a final, so the 10 seed moves on. And right now, LSU up 74-68 with 25 seconds to go. Yale has the ball, a three-pointer.
Oh, that was a good look.
And that'll probably do it for Yale.
LSU clutch 4 for 4 in the 1-and-1s. That's how you get in trouble, too. Get nervous and miss the front end of a 1-and-1. So LSU's hanging in there. I mean, Yale has been coming at them. You know that arena, too. You know, we can't really hear the crowd, but you know everybody who is not an LSU fan is rooting for Yale in this game. They're rooting for the big upset. But it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
It does not, as LSU goes to the free throw line. Auburn has extended their lead to 9 over New Mexico State with 3 minutes into the second half. And right now Florida State and Vermont are tied at 25 as that first half is winding down, about a minute 20 left in that one. And then the next tip will be Michigan State and Bradley, the 2 and the 15. That will be in Des Moines. So, of course, that's coming up That's where Louisville and Minnesota played. So that'll be tipping here soon. Belmont, Maryland will tip 30 minutes at the conclusion of this LSU-Yale game. Northwestern and Kansas will be out in Salt Lake City. That will be around 3 o'clock-ish, and that's a 4 and a 13. And then the one you've been talking about, you said you were going to take Murray in your bracket. Another 5-12 matchup, Marquette and Murray State. That's going to be around 3:30 our time in Hartford, Connecticut. Marquette is just a 3-point favorite over Murray State. You take Murray State?
I did. But how good am I feeling right now? I'm about to go 0-2 to start the tournament. That's not good.
Auburn up 12 now. And that one's starting to get a little breathing.
I got to check, but I think I took New Mexico State in that game.
Wow.
I think I did.
What a bummer.
Wow.
I think I took New Mexico State.
Well, hey, the good news is
last place does get rewarded. Just want to let you know,
it's a money back guarantee.
Last place gets rewarded.
Now Yale has now gotten hot. They've hit a couple of desperation threes here. They've got it to one possession with 7.9 left. Now they have no timeouts left, which I thought they burned one when they shouldn't have burned it. LSU has two timeouts left, but they got to keep making free throws. LSU's making the free throws, but they're getting two and giving up three on the other end. So Yale keeps inching closer here.
Kentucky will be without P.J. Washington tonight against Abilene Christian. And if they take care of business, we'll find out what will that mean for P.J. Washington moving forward if they're playing again on Saturday. They'll get the winner of Seton Hall and Wofford. And who knows, maybe their first two games, if they can survive in advance, it may be without their big man, P.J. Washington. Also, Syracuse will be the final game to tip tonight against Baylor. That's an 8-9 matchup, and Syracuse will be without Frank Howard, who was suspended, and LSU is taking care of business. They win by 5 over Yale. What was the line on that game, by the way?
I think it was like 7.5.
Okay.
Something like that.
So they did not cover. They were covering most of the game, and they did not cover. This is why it would be fun in a sports book, because if you had Yale and the points, you probably feel pretty cheap, but you'll go up and cash that ticket. And if you have LSU, you're probably sick to your stomach, minus the 7.5, because they should have covered that game. But we will find out moving forward if this is going to be a real issue with them, with Benford, because, like I said, he just looks like he is not ready for the spot. But he's in charge. He's the head coach right now, and LSU survives, and they advance. They move on down in Jacksonville, and they will await the winner of Belmont, Maryland. Is that right?
That is correct. Then that game will be tipping off in whatever, 30 minutes or whatever it is.
Yep, 30 minutes from now, because that game has just concluded. So they should be tipping around 2:15-ish, 2:20, somewhere in that range is when Belmont and Maryland will get game two started down in Jacksonville.
Vermont pulls even with Florida State at halftime. Interesting. The Catamounts not backing down.
Florida State is a tricky
team,
man.
Tricky.
They're really good.
They're so talented.
But they're also – they are. They are
They're
talented.
Not great shooters, but, boy, they get after it on defense. They're long. They get up and they can crash the boards. They can make big shots because you can't block their shot. They go up. They extend over you. But they're not great shooters. And then there's always the interesting Leonard Hamilton interview.
The minute you trust them, they rip your heart out, man. That's the way I look at Florida State.
I think Leonard Hamilton, in watching him do the halftime interview and postgame interviews, he's learned from last year. Remember he got in the doghouse because he didn't seem to understand the question and he got mad? It was very confusing. I think he is – I could be wrong, but I think he's taken it to heart and he's decided, I want to engage more. There are a lot of coaches where you can tell they're on autopilot. You could almost ask him a question. You could say, hey, have you seen any good movies lately? And they would be like – well, we just had, we had a good first half. We're battling hard, and they're not paying attention to the question at all. Yep. They just want to get an answer out there and get to the locker room. I think the good coaches, they actually are going to work with you, and they want to be engaging in the interview. I think Leonard Hamilton has done a better job in the ACC tournament for sure, and then it looked like in that halftime interview he was much better there.
There's a couple of baseball news and notes to pass along before we get out of here on this Thursday. The Tampa Bay Rays, you know, that guy Blake Snell, who won the Cy Young last year in the American League, Tampa just gave him a 5-year, $50 million contract extension.
Wow. So Tampa Bay actually investing.
Rewarding the 26-year-old ace on their staff with a new 5-year, $50 million. And to be honest, in baseball standards, to get a guy who just won the Cy Young, who's 26 years old, and he's your ace, $10 million a year is
bargain.
Quite a bargain.
Well, and why can they get him to do that? Because they're taking the leap of faith, and they're giving him the security, the guaranteed money now, rather than waiting until he's almost a free agent or the year before, because that's when it gets way too expensive. So that's a smart play, a la early 90s Indians. They were one of the first teams to
do
that.
They did it, yep.
The Rays have a loaded minor league system. I'm really curious if they can put together a team that could really challenge the Yankees or the Red Sox, because everything's got to go
right. Is
it
better than the Padres?
Well, I'm just looking at the ratings. I mean, they're right there. It's those
so
two.
So both of those two look like they're very healthy down on the farm.
Very healthy down on the farm. And unlike the Padres, the Rays won 90 games last year.
I kept waiting for them to collapse, and they just would not go away.
So the team that they're already putting out there is not bad, even though there's some names you're going, who are these guys?
I think Bryce Harper makes more money than their entire payroll per year.
Manny Machado
or Mike Trout with his new deal.
That'll be something in the next collective bargaining agreement. Will the players force the owners to have a salary floor so that when teams like the Rays, the lower budget teams, are rebuilding, they still have to pay some money out in salaries? Because you can really go low if you want to in the big leagues. Some teams do. It's not the worst strategy sometimes, because eventually when it's time to spend money on the right guys, you have the room and the budget to do it.
We brought up with Richard Deitch his thoughts on Seattle and Oakland starting off their Major League Baseball season, their game that counted out in Tokyo. That actually happened, if some of you didn't see. And Ichiro Suzuki left the Tokyo Dome to a standing ovation. He's 45 years old, and he announced his retirement today. So he says goodbye in Tokyo.
That was a special night.
And he says goodbye to MLB.
That was a big deal over there. For sure. I mean, he's as mega star as it comes there. One other baseball note, Darren, before we go. Tonight starts a 3-game series, Vanderbilt and Florida over at Hawkins Field. Two national title contenders, some high-level college baseball, early season matchup between these two teams. And Vanderbilt has not played their best to this point in the season. They've played fine. You know, they haven't played bad, but they're sitting at 1-2 in the league.
They already have, what, 5 losses?
Yeah, they've lost a couple that they shouldn't have lost, and so this will be a great test for them tonight, starting at the Hawk this evening.
That'll do it for us. Enjoy all the hoops all the way through the night. Enjoy the Predators and Penguins. We'll have tons to discuss and wrap up the week tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.